Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts, to get the latest episodes. Today's episode will be a bit of a recap about last night's win over the Houston Rockets. Not a great victory, but a fourth straight win for Miami, and Jimmy Butler notching his first triple-double of the season. Bam Adebayo, he's got Heat Nation a little concerned about some of his lack of aggression and whether or not he might be capable of being the top dog in South Florida. We'll see if there's some development there. I'll definitely break that down in the next segment. And I also want to talk a little bit about Max Strus coming up with 21 points off the bench and whether or not he could be the next Duncan Robinson. But I also wanted to get into some reports about John Collins from the Atlanta Hawks potentially being traded and whether or not he fits in Miami. But I'll start off by talking about Miami's 101-94 victory over the Houston Rockets. As I mentioned before, it's a fourth straight victory. It's an opportunity for Miami to inch closer to the 500 watermark that I think is going to help at least signify a potential change for this season and whether or not they'll be active in trying to be buyers with the trade deadline looming and whether or not they're actually going to be able to reach the postseason. I think the team still feels that they're closer to the postseason and another finals run that they are to potentially tanking the season. Look, I talked about this recently. A tank isn't going to happen, but it's just you try to be kind of like Dwayne's last season where you recognize you're not really going to make the playoffs. You're kind of inching towards mediocrity. You know it, but you still compete. You rest some players here and there. Like, there's nothing they can do about the kind of players that are in and out of the lineup. But I think, you know, this six games left on the road trip, and remember, Houston was game one of a seven-game road trip, it's going to be a huge defining factor for this season, whether or not Miami can compete with some of the better teams in the league, because they're going to be facing three of the top teams in Los Angeles, the two LA teams, and Utah. So those are very, very good challenges for Miami to kind of gauge whether or not they're capable of competing against some of the better teams. They'll have some dangerous opponents also with Oklahoma City that competes very hard, even if they're not particularly quote-unquote talented, and Golden State is getting an MVP-type year from Seth Curry. So as far as the game itself is concerned, Miami got down double digits early, but one of the things that keeps coming back for me is that Jimmy Butler has inspired this team and keeps carrying this group emotionally, psychologically, and statistically. He's just so good at what he does. And I know I sound like I'm gushing here, but I feel like with Jimmy back in the lineup, you really recognize what was missing during the three-week absence, because he is just, you never feel like you're completely out of it. Like, this is a game, even against an inferior opponent, that I feel probably this team would have lost if not for Jimmy Butler. Like, during the last couple of weeks before Jimmy's return, this is a game they probably would have lost. Because Jimmy has, you know, like the Clippers. The Clippers is a very good example. That Clippers game at home, after they had came back from a couple games on the road, and they were bringing back fans the next day, and that was the first day, actually. They had lost to the Denver Nuggets, and they were facing a bad LA Clippers team. And that Clippers team was, you know, led by Nick Batum. They were without Paul George. They were without Kawhi Leonard. Seems like an easy dub. Instead, you kind of go and you give up you accumulate a big lead, and then you give it up just as easily. I don't think Jimmy lets that happen. That, to me, Butler, there's no way he's going to just let the team give up 20-something points. Now, look, he's not a perfect player. He's still trying to find ways of getting everybody going. And I tweet from Rowan Nodkarny that I kind of thought was an interesting one. You know, he recognized Jimmy, instead of looking off to it or looking to make passes to his teammates, being more aggressive and getting to the rim as a good sign that he's aggressive, and that's a positive. But to me, it's also like, well, you know, those guys can't be trusted. So it's it's hard to gauge exactly where Jimmy's mindset is. I think he still believes in his teammates, and he still wants to try and get them going as early as possible. But he also recognized midway through the game, yeah, I can't do this anymore. I can't rely on Kelly Olynyk to struggle, or, you know, somebody else in that starting lineup maybe that's not going to be contributing. Kendrick Nunn didn't have it dialed up either. So this was a bad game from Kelly O, unfortunately, one of those that we did not expect after he played so well the last couple games. But you know, that's just who Kelly is. Max Strus, however, did have a big game. And also, Duncan Robinson had a great performance. He came in early on, shot very well. Looked like he was going to be dialed up, and then that kind of cooled off at the end there. Did finish with 15 points, 5 of 11 from three-point range. So not perfect, not great by any stretch, but a really, really solid game. I'd say it's kind of a bounce-back game for him to get a little confidence, because you saw that first shot fall, and then all of a sudden he starts to feel a little bit more comfortable. And if you look at how he was being defended and the quality of those shots, they were the same shots he's been missing over the last 10 games. Nothing out of the ordinary. Hand in his face, sidestepping, taking the one dribble pull-up, all the same kind of quality shots, curling around screens, etc. And just sometimes they fall, sometimes they don't. So I just – with Duncan, I think it is a psychological factor, and I think it's that's a big part of why he felt a little bit more comfortable in the first quarter. But I also just believe in Jimmy. Even after being down by double digits, they came back, built a double-digit lead for themselves of their own, and then, you know – actually, the Rockets wind up clawing their way back. They were without Victor Oladipo, who was injured in the second quarter. P.J. Tucker got hurt in the third quarter, too. So this was a team that's already missing Christian Wood. But they challenged. They have some good players there. John Wall was active. He's not great, perhaps, at this stage in his career, but they had some nice contributions from Jashaun Tate. He looks like he's a really solid NBA player. DeMarcus Cousins looked like he was dialed up early. He had 16 points for them, so that's going to be one of the bigger regrets, I think, for Miami fans is that they couldn't get a player like Cousins when I thought there was an obvious connection and a good fit for him here. He certainly seems like the kind of floor-stretching big that might have been able to play alongside Bam Adebayo. But I guess that's why you pay Myers Leonard $10 million, not expecting him to be out for the season. That's a whole other conversation for another time. But it also kind of, in the end there, look, Miami did find a way to hold on to victory. They played great defense in the second half, mostly because, in my opinion, they were doing things well, pressing, trapping the guards as they were bringing the ball up. I also think that they were missing some of their key, you know, ball handlers and playmakers. Without Oladipo, without Wood, they just didn't have the same kind of options available. And so they're going to suffer offensively. And that's why they only scored 10 points in the third quarter. I can't turn this into a bad-mouthing session for the Heat, or I don't feel comfortable doing so. It's a victory. It's not a season-defining one. It's not over a great opponent. It's over an opponent that had lost three games in a row prior to facing Miami, and they wound up losing two of their best players in Tucker and Oladipo, and they were already without Wood. So not exactly the kind of victory that you can hang your hat on. You have to just figure out what you did wrong. Try to improve on it. You've got a really quality opponent coming up on Saturday night, and that's where you start to really define who you are as a team. If you want to contend, if you want to challenge for the Eastern Conference throne, if you see yourself as a legitimate playoff team and not a fluke, as so many people have expected you to be, then the opportunity becomes present now. When you take on Utah, when you take on the Lakers and Clippers, now is when you really start to prove who you are as a team. So we'll see how Miami responds. I cannot overstate how much of a season-defining moment this road trip is, because you really have to figure out who you are as a team. If you can steal a victory here and there against some of those quality teams, and I fully expected a 2-5 finish, maybe a 3-4 finish for this stretch. If you can wind up getting an extra win here and there, I think your chances of being a repeat of the team that you were last year are that much better. Now, I'll also add, Tyler Herro was without, he did not play for Miami. He was part of the health and safety protocols right before the game, so a last-minute scratch there. I don't think we've gotten any confirmation as to what the issue is with Herro, and I don't know that we will, because you know, Miami is very secretive about those kinds of things and for good reason. So I have no issue with whether or not we're going to get that kind of information. At least I haven't heard anything right at this point. But I do also want to talk about the differences between Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, because I think there were very obvious ones in the Rockets game yesterday that has Heat Nation a little concerned. And I'll also get to some of your questions about what's going on, John Collins, and everything else around the league. So stay tuned. You're listening to Locked On Heat. One thing that is difficult is going to an auto parts store and finding the parts that you need, because with the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's really hard to find exactly what you're looking for. You're dealing with this person behind the counter, and they're looking for the parts that they just happen to carry on their computer. You've got computers in your pocket with access to rockauto.com. Why don't you just go there and help a family-owned business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers on their easy-to-use site, and you'll get everything you need with just a few easy clicks delivered directly and safely to your door. Why spend more for the exact same parts? RockAuto.com's low prices are the same for everybody. So go to RockAuto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or your truck, and then go to their How Did You Hear About Us section and enter the phrase Locked On so they know we sent you. It's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. February is Black History Month, and the Locked On Podcast Network is honoring the challenges and success of black men and women in sports with a new series called Locked On Presents More Than a Game. Don't miss this week's episode featuring Candace Cooper of Locked On Tar Heels and Erica Ayala of Locked On Women's Basketball discussing the opportunities and challenges that come with being a black woman in sports. There's a new episode coming next week, so go ahead and subscribe to the Locked On Presents podcast feed on the radio.com app or wherever you get podcasts. Look, I'll address the John Collins thing right away because I feel like that's something that is on everybody's mind right now. A piece from Sam Amick of The Athletic reports that John Collins might be on the move from the Atlanta Hawks, that there are entertaining offers, partly because Collins is entering restricted free agency, and I don't think he's part of the Hawks' long-term plan there. They've got Danilo Gallinari, who they stole away from Miami. They've got some other key players there. Clint Capella signed to a large contract. And Collins, as good a player as he is, just doesn't seem like he makes a whole heck of a lot of sense for Atlanta and their future. And Miami, a team that seems like they could use a power forward, Collins plays that position, and maybe he would be a great fit here. Unfortunately, I am torn about it. He is 23. He's young. He's known for being a very good scorer. And Miami could certainly use the boost offensively. Now, he's only making $4 million this year, which is a problem because for a player of Collins' quality, and he is a good player, you're going to have to send out basically low salaries in order to make the numbers work. But that's not enticing enough for Atlanta to approach a deal. I talked to Brad Rowland, the host of Locked On Hawks. He gave me the perspective that, look, his feelings is that Atlanta is not looking to move John Collins at all. That they probably will just let him walk in free agency because I don't see anything. He doesn't see anything manufacturing that is enticing enough for Atlanta to make that deal because of the salary situation, because they're trying to make a playoff push. Now, I know things might not look great in Atlanta right now, but they're not so dire that you want to start trading away a quality role player. Would a player like Precious Achiuwa make a lot of sense for them? Maybe. I as a secondary quote-unquote piece, not as the foundation of a trade. So I don't see that there's a lot going on there between Miami and Collins. If you look at his overall fit, yes, he can score. I think he's a fine player. He can stretch the floor a little bit. He's young. He fits alongside Bam and Tyler. If you're able to keep Tyler, that is. It makes some sense. Does it raise Miami's ceiling considerably? I don't think so. I think you also have some concerns about defense. Now, look, he's a South Florida native. I thought he was going to get drafted by Miami and said they wound up taking that Bam Adebayo kid. That wound up being a pretty good deal for the Heat. I think they also have concerns about Collins' defense. I think those are the most pressing. He is not a great defender. He lacks awareness on the floor. That would be, to me, the thing that stands out to most is that he seems like he spaces out there. He doesn't hedge appropriately. He doesn't know when to trap. He doesn't know when to rotate. And that's, you know, part of Miami's strength defensively is understanding when to move. That's why Crowder was such a perfect fit last year. Collins is the inverse of that. Much better scorer than Jay, at least, you know, the version of Jay that we got early in the season. But I think overall he's a better scorer. He's a good low post scorer. He's more of an athletic lob threat. He can even stretch the floor somewhat. So I like his fit offensively, but defensively, he's going to give up a lot of points. I can't get past that. And right now, Miami's biggest problem is a defensive one. Offensively, they're struggling. They've managed to become a much better team defensively. Their numbers have shown that they're actually improved to a top 10 defense, but they're still giving up a lot of threes. I think it's also the quality opponent that they've been facing. They've faced some bad teams, which is why they have a 4-game winning streak right now. I don't know that John Collins is the player that you want to invest your future in. Now, I mean, I could see it working out too. It's like, I'm torn about it. I'll be 100% honest with you. He's young. He's a South Florida guy. I could see the fit alongside Bam working out. Can he improve defensively? I think so. I think he's bright enough where he can figure out the weaknesses in his game. And I think Miami's experience coaching players like that can really help get the most out of him. So I'm curious to see whether or not Miami would feel worth, like they want to talk that, have that conversation with Atlanta. They probably already dug into it. I just don't know what Miami offers in exchange. It can't be Tyler Hero. There's no fit there. Now, is it a three-team trade where they moved Hero somewhere else? Potentially. But right now, I just don't see it. I don't see it. And look, we're talking about a divisional opponent here. I don't know why you want to trade Collins to somebody a few miles south that you're going to be facing four times a year. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. As far as realistically happening, I can't get past it. Sorry, guys. I don't know what else to say about it. But I did want to answer some of your questions, particularly in terms of what happened against the Rockets. This question comes in from Webby, and it kind of helps me phrase the argument a little bit here. This question, does Bam have it in him to be the alpha of the Heat with or without Jimmy? And I think part of the argument there is based on that performance against the Rockets, where Jimmy Butler had a triple-double. 8 of 18 from the floor, 27 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. Bam, conversely, 3 of 8, 13 rebounds, and 8 assists and only 10 points. And the points, I think, is the issue that everybody has, is that he didn't look aggressive. He didn't look like he was willing to take that shot frequently. He was going up against opponents that were much smaller than him in the low post, and he passed the ball out to the three-point line. Look, Jimmy does the same thing. And so I think that's where Webby's question comes in from, and I have concerns about it. I've brought this up for weeks now. I see Bam, and I don't know that he's your lead guy. I don't know that he's your emotional leader. He can be great on the floor. He's just not the guy who's going to carry you and inspire you the same way Jimmy does. Maybe there's just a will to win that is so great from Jimmy that it inspires others. And I don't know that I see that in Bam necessarily. Bam is a hell of a player. I don't think you'll get anybody who speaks more highly of Bam on and or off the floor than I do. And yet, I still see that there are limitations in his game. And I saw the argument there from somebody over at Five Reasons Sports, Greg Sylvander, Lefty Leif, that was the term that he used to go by before. Lefty Leif, used to write in about, he said, you know, that it's lame to knock on Bam Adebayo. I disagree there. I think there are ways of, you don't want to say that Bam isn't a max player, because to me, he absolutely is. But there are also holes in his game. There's also things that he needs to improve. It used to be the unwillingness to take the jump shot. Now we still, we start to see him regress in some cases. Like, he's had moments there where he feels comfortable taking that shot, and then he regresses the next game where he does not feel comfortable. That's a problem. He cannot be counted on to put up 20 points per game, which is what he needs to do. Like, that's a big part of it. And I always want to make the comparison to Nikola Jokic, because I feel like he went through this earlier in his career when he was with Denver. Now he's the MVP talk. He's a candidate for the Most Valuable Player Award, and deservedly so. But early on in his career, people saw what he could do offensively, and they wonder why he was looking to pass the ball as much. And I think that's just his approach to the game. And I think for Bam, it is as well. It's like, yeah, he can score, but he also looks to get other people going. And, maybe in his opinion, backing down PJ Tucker isn't as good a shot as, kicking it up to, Jimmy Butler at the three-point line. That was a head-scratching move from the Rockets game. I don't know what he was thinking there. He had a much smaller opponent defending him in the low post, and he winds up kicking it out to a 12% shooter from three. Not great. To answer Webby's question, I don't know that Bam is a quote-unquote alpha. There are very few guys that are like that. You have to be a combination of – you have to have a combination of stars in order to win, and very few players can be that guy. I think you could have that argument that even if Dame Lillard didn't have a CJ McCollum, maybe people wouldn't see Dame as that guy. There would be empty calories as far as his points are concerned. I don't necessarily ascribe to that belief. I think Dame is one of the kind of guys that can lead your team completely. I don't know that Bam is there yet. I think he's an all-star, without a doubt. I think he's a max player, without a doubt. I also would like for him to be more aggressive and have more of an imprint as far as his personality is concerned on the locker room. I want him to be the vocal leader that gets guys going. And right now, I don't see it. Like, he can be critical, but there's a difference there. Look, I look at Kelly Olynyk's play. I look at Max Strus in post-game comments talking about Jimmy telling him to shoot every time. That's the kind of – that's the dog that Jimmy brings to the table. He's just his attitude that gets everybody going and gets the most out of them. And, look, I mean, when Olynyk talked to me about it on the podcast, about what Jimmy does for this team and how he kind of just inspires this group and you kind of just play off of him, he is – the personality that Miami was missing the last couple seasons before he joined the team. You know, when you had Josh Richardson as your best player, and he was a very good player, but he's not a leader in that sense. He's a leader in that, you know, you look at him, you know he's working hard. You can count on him to be there as far as fitting his role, but not the kind of guy who's going to carry you to the next level. Jimmy is that guy. That's it. That's all there is to it. I don't think Bam is there yet. I don't know that he ever will be. We'll have to wait and see. It could get there. I'll hedge my bets a little bit and say that he could get there down the road. Let's answer this next question that comes in from Philly. Philly Heat, you made it 4 shows in a row. If the NBA is only allowed 1 All-Star per team, who gets the nod for the Heat? Is it Jimmy or Bam? It's got to be Jimmy Butler to me. Although I think he'll put up enough statistics over the next couple weeks before that decision is finalized, where he earns a coach's nod because he is Jimmy Butler. Like, let's say, how about this? You are facing Miami as an opposing coach. You're more concerned about what Jimmy can do than what Bam can do. I mean, look, there's only so much game planning you can do for a 6'9" playmaking big like Bam Adebayo, who's a hell of a defender. But I think Jimmy is your overall concern, even with all the offensive struggles, even with a shot that seems to be somewhat broken, although he did hit a 3-pointer against the Rockets. But I think coaches around the league view Jimmy as that guy, and his performance in the finals absolutely cemented that perspective. So Philly, I think Jimmy is your clear all-star. Maybe not clear. He's just slightly above where Bam is right now. This next question comes in from Tommy. He writes in, what do you think the reason is for Bam looking so passive when he gets near the rim? Do you think it's more physical or mental? Yeah, this seems to be a recurring theme, but I appreciate the questions from everybody. Yeah, I think it's not mental. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't think it's physical. Although, he didn't seem capable of backing down. I want to say it was Tate. Tate, sturdily built, you know, a solid-looking NBA player. Maybe Bam just doesn't feel comfortable backing him down. He relies more on speed than overall strength, although clearly he's a very strong human being. He just doesn't seem like he relies on that strength so much as he does the athleticism and speed to get his shot off over opponents. So I think it's more of a mental thing. I think he sees he has a clear lane for a dunk and he'll take that shot if necessary. But if not, if he has to, you know, go to an up and under move or something around the basket, which to me, I still think he does not have a go-to move in the low post. He'd rather kick it out to a 3-point shooter. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's been taught. I'm sure Eric Spoelstra would downplay that completely. I think he did in yesterday's post-game presser. It's just, what is he going to say? You know, I wish Bam would be more aggressive. On the nights when Bam is aggressive, then he kind of talks him up. But on the days that he's not, he's just like, well, he's looking to get other players going. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe there is that balance that Bam is constantly trying to walk between getting his own shot and getting everybody going. I just don't think he's at the same level as Jimmy where he can flip the switch as quickly as Jimmy can, you know, if that makes sense. Like, Jimmy will start making those plays early on where he's dishing it out to Kendrick Nunn and Kelly Olynyk. And when those shots aren't falling, then he can say, oh, no. Hell with this, I'm going to take these shots myself. And Bam might not be there just yet, where he has to recognize, I can't trust those guys. I'm not looking to kick it out to Jimmy Butler in the three-point line. I'm going to be able to dunk on whoever was guarding me in the low post. So I'll answer some of the questions about P.J. Tucker and Victor Oladipo, whether or not they're fits in Miami, and talk a little bit about Max Strus and what it means about Duncan Robinson in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV. If you want to bet on what's going on with WandaVision, make sure that you go to BetOnline. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. This episode is brought to you by 1010. Now, you may have read about this in the New York Times, InStyle magazine, or Forbes, and we're excited to tell you about it. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring, and they're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com. And when they're gone, they're gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're ready to mark a special commitment or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day, you're definitely going to want to check this out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings is now available exclusively at BlueNile.com. Fantasy basketball advice, it's important that you have a reliable source. More people trust Josh Lloyd, host of Locked On Fantasy Basketball, than any other fantasy basketball podcast. Subscribe to the number one fantasy basketball podcast, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, wherever you get podcasts. Now, that's just not ad copy there. Josh is one of the best. I've been on his show a number of times over the years. He's absolutely earned his place atop the rankings there, and he is the LeBron James of fantasy basketball coast. So make sure if you're into fantasy basketball that you do listen to Josh, because you're not going to get a better podcast anywhere out there. I want to get this question out of the way here. This one comes in from Kelly O'Burner. How are we feeling about PJ Tucker and Victor Oladipo as trade targets after this one, meaning after the game against the Rockets? How would it realistically take to get them? What would it realistically take to get them? They would no doubt fix some problems, but there seem to be injury concerns now. And I think that's a big part of it. So it's an interesting question. I think the idea of Victor Oladipo is more enticing than the reality of it. Even in some discussions I've had with other NBA media types, it just seems like Victor is still poised for a fairly big payday, even if he winds up getting hurt throughout the rest of the season, just because teams are so desperately looking for a star. I would really be surprised if the market dries up so considerably that he doesn't get somewhere within the vicinity of $20 million. And you're basically looking to pay Victor Oladipo $20 million or Duncan Robinson $20 million. I don't think you want to pay both of them $20 million apiece. And that's where the issue comes in there, because I think Duncan's a fine player. I don't know that you necessarily want to make that kind of financial commitment to him either, but I don't feel comfortable doing it with Victor. He's a great guy. I think you'd love having him on your team because there's no doubt that he tries hard, although Pacers fans might argue otherwise. Overall, I think he's been very well liked everywhere he's gone. And, you know, even in Orlando, where he never quite achieved star status, I think he's still well liked and well regarded because he was such a nice guy, so likable, and he tries hard. And I think that's a big part of it. But there's also the reality that he's only shown one really, really good season. And other than that, it's been kind of wasted promise, or, you know, more towards the end of the spectrum where he's injured and just doesn't seem to have it anymore. And that's currently what we're seeing with him in Houston. He's been struggling, and I don't know if he's ever going to get fully 100% healthy again. And if this is the case, do you want to make a trade for him? Do you want to give up a future potential all-star like Tyler Hero? I don't see it. And as far as PJ Tucker is concerned, yes, he's a guy that fits an obvious need here, but he looks sluggish too. Like, he just does not look good. I think if you look at Houston's run of success, it's mostly because Christian Wood has probably been slept on quite a bit, and he's actually a much better player than people think. I don't know if it's necessarily PJ Tucker filling a big role. I don't know what you want to give up there. When I talked to Rowan of SI.com about it, he thought maybe a first-round pick might be what makes sense to get a PJ Tucker. I don't know that you want to do that either. Even though it fits a great need, I think we're all kind of hanging on to the idea of PJ Tucker, just like the idea of Victor Oladipo is a great one, because he's a star-level player, because he's a guy you can plug in and makes a lot of sense, and you're trying to recreate what you did last year with Jay Crowder. That was lightning in a bottle. You'll never get it back. It's time to move on to something else. Maybe it's Collins. Maybe, you know, to come full circle with this conversation, maybe Collins is the guy who winds up saying, I'm so happy to be playing in Miami. I grew up idolizing Dwayne Wade. I wanted to be here, thought they were going to draft me, and now to be here, I'm going to play the best basketball of my career. Maybe it works out that way. It could very well work out that way. it could also work out where, you know, you have those head scratching moments where he gives up 20, even if he only scores 15, and then he's a liability for this team. So it's an interesting conundrum. Miami certainly sees themselves, I think, still as a playoff contender, and they'll probably try to make a move. I just don't know that you want to sacrifice something big in order to do so. But I don't know that there's a bigger, not star, but I don't know if there's a bigger and more enticing trade bait than Duncan Robinson, who I think a lot of people are starting to turn on somewhat because he did have that bad stretch, and particularly also because if he's not scoring, then what else is he doing? Look, it was kind of magnified by Max Strus's statistical line yesterday. 21 points, 0 rebounds, 0 assists. Didn't really do anything else other than look to score. Had a phenomenal dunk, by the way. He seems much more explosive than Duncan. I also don't think he's quite the shooter as Duncan. But the contrast between the two and the conversation evolves and so like, well, if you can get Max Strus to shoot 5 of 8 from 3-point range, do you really need Duncan Robinson? And I still think you do. I think I see Strus reaching that level? I could. He doesn't have the same size. There's a little bit more giddy up in his game than Duncan. I think he could put the ball down a little bit better. I think given Miami's history of maximizing a player, I don't know. I think he could probably wind up reaching Duncan-esque levels. But there's something about that combination of Duncan's quick release, his overall size and length that make him a much better shooting option than Max Strus. Strus, a little bit smaller, not quite as quick with the release, more of a catch and shoot type option, doesn't require the dribble handoff. Look, he has legit range. We saw him pull up from 28 feet or so and pretty comfortably, you know, doing so. He was feeling himself last night. And I think this is the best version of him. I also don't know that consistently he's going to be the same kind of shooter that Duncan is, nor is he going to attract the same kind of gravity, at least for now. Maybe Miami can just set themselves up kind of like the University of Miami used to be, quarterback U. Maybe they'll just be, you know, 3-point specialist team X, because, you know, between Wayne Ellington and Ray Allen before that and Duncan Robinson and potentially Max Strus on the road, maybe just teams will see themselves taking, or players will see themselves getting a boost in their 3-point shooting if they come to Miami, because there's a mentality of how to work here, how to approach it, and a great shooting coach as well. I don't know. I'm torn because I feel like Duncan is a good player, but I'm also concerned about how much he expects to get paid and what he could get paid out there in the market. I think Miami's still interested in keeping him. I saw the argument, I think, from Philly Heat, actually, about whether or not having two shooters is a bad problem to have, and it's not. I mean, I see what Philly's point is. Yes, you want to have as much shooting as possible, but you can't afford to have that kind of shooting. You can't afford to have Duncan making the expected $20 million a year. And if you've got another potential option in Max Strus that you can develop to fill that same role, maybe not as a starter, but somewhere along the line. I mean, I don't know that Strus is a better or worse defender than Robinson, but I think he tries just as hard. I don't think you're going to sacrifice as much. And so if you're going to get similar shooting, maybe not as good, not yet, as what Duncan Robinson provides, and you can trade Duncan to another contending team in the Western Conference in the hope of getting something similar in return, or maybe another player that can shore up Miami's defensive issues, I think Miami has to explore it. And I think that's a conversation the team has already had. I don't have any intel on that. I haven't asked whether or not Duncan Robinson is being shopped around. I don't think he is, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is either. I don't know. I'll leave it at that. I think he's a fine player. I think he's also replaceable. And that's a concern for a lot of Heat fans, I think, that saw him as being such a focal point for the offense. But Max's performance kind of highlights that maybe Duncan is a lot more replaceable than you would have expected. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. I'll be recapping Miami's hopeful victory over the Utah Jazz on Saturday, so make sure you stay tuned for that. I'm Dave Vermeil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support.